Welcome to the Teaching Journeys podcast, hosted by Dave Roberts. Humanity possesses a unique skill, the ability to pass knowledge from one generation to the next. This podcast embraces that ability, offering learning opportunities through conversations with extraordinary guests. Dave aims to leave a positive mark on individuals around the world. So before you dive into today's episode, please share this podcast with your network, including friends, family, and colleagues. And please consider leaving a rating or review. Your support makes all the difference.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to another episode of the Teaching Journeys podcast. I'm your host, Dave Roberts, and today it is my pleasure to have back as a return guest, Kerry Cooper. Kerry Cooper is a licensed clinical social worker and the owner of Kerry Cooper Holistic Therapy in Northern New Jersey. In her private practice, she counsels teens and works to give them the tools they need to navigate life. Kerry takes a holistic approach to therapy, looking at the whole person, not just their symptoms. Kerry is the author of Mental Health Uncensored, 10 Foundations Every Parent Needs to Know, a book designed to give parents steps on how to improve their child's mental health. Her second book is a workbook for teens, Mental Health Uncensored, 10 Foundations Every Teen Needs to Know. She is a speaker and writer who helps educate teens and parents on the topics teens face in everyday life. She is a graduate of the University of Pennsylvania and continues to further her education by obtaining additional certifications in her field, one of her favorite pastimes. When Kerry isn't busy working with teens, she is busy with her own 4 children and 1 chicken. Kerry, with that, welcome to the Teaching Journeys podcast. And before we begin, I'm sorry that you're down to 1 chicken, but for the sake of transparency, I want to make sure I reflected that accurately in a bio.
Thank you. Yes, we've had a few losses of chickens, but we still have 1. So,
well, 1 is better than none. So
absolutely.
So, but it's great to have you back as a return guest contributor. I had you back way earlier this year, and we talked about holistic therapy that you do in general for teens, how holistic practices help improve teens' mental health, the challenges that teens have experienced, and you know what you've done to help them transcend it. And today we're going to have a conversation around one aspect of mental health that I think is tends to be overlooked at times among young adults, and that's sleep disturbances. So we're going to dive into that.
Great. Yes. In my practice, what I started noticing with these kids was that whenever their sleep schedule really got out of whack, that's when their mental health really also started spiraling downward. So one of the common questions I always ask when I see a kid now is, how'd you sleep this last week? And the moment they start telling me about sleep problems, I know we're heading somewhere not good. So we really need to pull back, reassess, and figure out what's happening. It's such a window into how they're doing to see whether or not we need to adjust our therapy or not. So sleep is just crucial. So when they're all of a sudden up till 3 in the morning, or they're not sleeping and they have a lot on their mind, and now they're sleep deprived, now their mood is everywhere, like that's something that needs to be addressed in therapy.
What are the triggers specifically that enable teens not to get enough restful sleep? And I look at REM sleep as being really key, that 3 to 4 hours of restful sleep. Are the triggers for teens different than they are for adults, or are they similar, or are they both?
Both, similar and different in a sense. So where they're similar is that they can't sometimes turn off their minds at night. And we hear a lot of adults say, I can't turn off my mind. I lay in bed, I just think of things. And a lot of that is the anxiety. A lot of that is stress. So then we really need to look at, okay, what tools do we need to put into place to help you be able not to turn off your mind? I never like that phrase because you can't just turn off your mind, but how do we get you to not attach to those thoughts so you're not spiraling? But you're going to have thoughts, even in a yoga practice, meditation, you're going to have thoughts. It's how do you not attach to them and kind of let them float by? So that's a lot of the work I do with them and adults as well. I do a lot of sleep coaching with adults. So that piece is very similar. Another piece that's very similar, but kind of for 2 different reasons, is that they're not structuring their time well, And all of a sudden, they're now doing work at like 11 o'clock, midnight, something like that, to try to like catch up. And they're like, oh, it needs to be done tomorrow. And they had a long day with sports or theater and school and work. And they're trying to shove it all in and they just can't get it done. So they're pushing that time when they need to be turning off later and later. And adults do that as well. But a lot of times adults do it with, I worked all day. I was busy all day. This is my time. And now I'm going to scroll through my phone to quote unquote relax or play a game on my phone. So both sets are pushing their bedtimes kind of further and further out and a little bit for different reasons. Or sometimes kids too. I had a really long day. I want to relax. I'm scrolling through TikTok and all of a sudden it's 2 a.m.
Yeah. And I know particularly for devices, I think it's been recommended that turn off your devices at least an hour before you want to go to sleep. And that it's important to also try to get to bed at the same time and get up at the same time to have that kind of routine. But
yeah, so absolutely with the devices, and I preach this to parents all the time, basically the moment your child gets a device, you should have it be a rule that it is charging somewhere other than the bedroom. It should not be in the bedroom at night. But parents, you know, if you have young kids in their home, you don't need your device right next to your bed. Nobody's calling you or trying to get a hold of you in the middle of the night. You can also put your phone out. My phone's on Do Not Disturb all night long, and the only people who could break through are my children. Yeah. Because I don't want to be woken up with a notification. You know, we really need restful sleep uninterrupted. So I always say, especially for the kids, phones out of the bedroom, as long as you can do this for. At some point, it does become unreasonable when a kid goes to college. Obviously, there's really nowhere else to put the phone. It's there. But hopefully they're at least in the habit of turning it on Do Not Disturb. That way their friend's not bothering them at 4 o'clock in the morning.
Yep. And really, you know, one of the things I understand about sleep is that if you're going to go to bed, make sure your space is conducive to sleep. Take the laptops off the top of your bed, any other portable devices, you know, have some restful, peaceful music in the background. Go to bed at least a half hour before you're going to go to sleep just to relax. Those are the things that, I mean, what I understood is really helps in terms of promote consistent and restful sleep habits.
Yes. And one of the myths I would love to debunk is that sometimes both adults and kids think, well, I can catch up on weekends. There's no catching up.
No.
You either get the sleep that night or you don't get the sleep that night. Now, I will say, however, on weekends, kids need sleep. And teenagers especially are a little bit like toddlers where they need a little bit of extra sleep because of the changes going on in their body. And you know what a toddler is like when they miss their nap time. They're pretty unreasonable creatures. Teenagers are pretty similar to that. So I'm okay with them sleeping in a little bit on the weekend, reasonably. But it's not a time to, quote unquote, catch up on sleep from the week. It's just a little bit nice to get some extra sleep on the weekends. But that shouldn't lead into 1 o'clock, 2 o'clock in the afternoon. It has to be reasonable. But I also don't want parents waking them up at 7 a.m. being like, well, this is what time you wake up during the week. Let them sleep a little bit.
Yeah. And I think that's kind of an intuitive call, you know, to let that happen. But for me, if it was one of my kids and I knew they weren't sleeping well during the week and it was a weekend, I'd let them sleep in as long as I needed to, because it's certainly, like you said, it's not going to help them catch up on lost sleep, but at least for that day, it's going to at least get them somewhat rested.
Yeah. And they need it. That's also like the kid comes home right after school and takes a brief nap. There's really nothing wrong with that, as long as it doesn't mess up their bedtime routine.
Yep.
Sometimes you just need additional sleep. We know when you're sick, your body needs more sleep. But also sometimes you just need it, and that's okay.
Yeah, it's like listen to your body. Trust what your body is telling you. If you need to sleep, sleep. If you don't, don't.
Right. And I will say, though, sometimes I do this work a lot with adults. They'll tell me around 3 o'clock, 4 o'clock, they get really tired and they can't take a nap. They're at work or they're doing things. And I said, sometimes the best thing to do, especially around 3 or 4 o'clock, because our body actually naturally does get tired around that time period. Just like in the middle of the night, our body becomes a little bit more restless around 3 or 4 a.m. Then you hear people being like, I wake up during that time a lot. It's your circadian rhythm. But during the daytime, if around 3 or 4 o'clock comes, even 5, and you're feeling tired, take a 10-minute walk outside. And you will be amazed at how re-energized you feel. Sometimes you just need that fresh air, a little bit of movement, a little bit of sun, hopefully if the sun's out, to really kind of refire you up for the rest of the day.
Yep. Yeah, and I mean, just a rejuvenated walk out in the nature is just really just so healing. And I know, like, when I felt like a little flat, when I've had low energy, I'll go out and take a walk for 15 or 20 minutes, and I come back, and my mood is better. I feel more refreshed. I feel a little more energized, and I don't need that nap.
If I'm doing a lot of work on my computer one day, I will definitely try and stop at one point, get outside, walk around the block, come back, and it's like, oh, wow, I could focus better, and, you know, this feels so much better. So get up, move, get outside. Those are things that are so important to our mental and physical health to begin with.
Yeah, and for me, who spends a lot of time on the computer and I doing podcast editing and recording and other stuff for school, I have to consciously remind myself, get up and move.
Yes, absolutely. And, you know, we need to also kind of be a model for our children and get up and move when we're feeling tired. And they notice that. They're like, oh, you know, mom or dad took a break and went outside for a walk and then came back and refocused. Like, they see that stuff.
Yeah. You know, and I know when you work with teens, inevitably as a therapist, if you're working with a minor child, you know, under 18, you're working with the family. You have to have the family involved in treatment. The adolescent's life, though they may want to admit that they want to be independent from their family, revolves a lot around their family. How do you incorporate the family in terms of family therapy, in terms of support and help, or helping them model appropriate sleep habits for their teens?
That's such a great question. So, you know, in my office all the time, parents will tell their kids, you need to be working out, you need to be eating better, you need to be sleeping better. And without fail, the kid will call them out of my office if they're not doing it. And they're like, well, you're not going to bed, you're playing Candy Crush on your phone. You know, you're not working out, you're not eating well. And I tell the parents all the time, they don't listen to what you say. They notice what you do.
Yes.
You can't tell your child or expect your child to eat well, to exercise, to go to bed well, if you're not doing that. You have to be the role model. And you also need to be taking control of your own health and mental health and doing what's right for you.
Yeah. It's like it would be me like telling my child, you know, my 17-year-old, hey, you got to quit smoking when I got a cigarette dangling out of my mouth.
Exactly. Or, you know, oh, I wish my kids read more. And I always say to the parents, well, are you sitting around your house reading? You have to model it.
Yeah, you got to model it. You have to live it.
You have to really show what's important to you as a parent.
Yeah.
And that's what you hope to pass along to your children. You know, in my house, I noticed, am I on my phone in front of my kids? Let me make sure I put that away. Let me make sure that I'm doing something else productive. And I think parents just, the phone is so addictive. And if they're just sitting around and they get bored, they pick up their phone. Yeah. So what we did in my house, you know, I have baskets of books everywhere. Mm-hmm. And it's like, oh, well, if I'm bored, I'm going to sit down and pick up a book. And the public library is like my best friend. They are such a gift, the public library. I really wish more people understood that. But take your kids there from a young age and go there. It's amazing. And then, you know, what else? Parents are always like, I want my kids to do hobbies. Yeah, that's great. What hobbies are you doing?
That's right. That's right. Yeah. I mean, we have to show through action what we want our kids to become. So, Carrie, I know we talked about the importance of parents modeling appropriate behavior to enable their children to have better sleep habits. Are there any other interventions you do in the context of family therapy besides encouraging behavior modeling that can facilitate appropriate sleep habits with teenagers?
I think it's also about, looking at the family calendar as well. I think sometimes we're quick to overschedule our kids and then everything gets backed up kind of late. And I don't think parents are always aware of how much they've really tried to pack into a day until they sit down and look at it. And I think that's important to really pull up the calendar and say, when are we actually ending all activities and everything? And when are we eating dinner? And how much downtime then does our child have before they're supposed to be going to bed?
Yeah, and how much, and I'm not trying to throw parents under the bus, but how much of the activities that children are involved in is it a combination of like, kids say, I really don't want to do it, but I'm doing it to just please my parents, or I'm doing it to make my parents happy. And are we still seeing parents try to vicariously live through their kids?
I think that's a part of it. I think the other part is that the parents are really trying to give, in their mind, kids every opportunity possible to be successful. And I don't think they realize that they don't need as much as what they're giving these kids. And I think the other layer to this is the society and the expectation. Depending on where you live, especially, I know up by me, it's like if your kid's not in club sports by second grade, what are you doing? And it's like rec sports should be fine enough. Like they shouldn't be on competitive teams by second grade. But, when everybody else is doing it, that mentality of, well, everyone else's kids are getting these reps in, everyone else's kids are doing these individualized practices. If I don't do that for my child, they're going to be behind.
Yeah. And, the thing that I think about is that having these kids do all these activities, particularly at an age where they're just developing their decision-making skills and, their brains are beginning to grow into rational decision-making. Carrie, and you probably see this more than I do since I'm retired, that having all of that, those extracurricular activities, in addition to the pressure to do well at school, that's got to be one of the contributing factors of teens having a lot of difficulty shutting their brains down.
Absolutely. There is a lot going on in their day. And they really don't have that time to just kind of relax and be a kid. So I do. I think there's a lot on their mind. And I think they go from one structured activity to another structured activity. And I think that's something that as parents, we forget, especially when they're young. Kids learn through play. Kids learn by running around in the backyard. Like, and everything at this point is almost like a structured activity.
Yeah. One of the things you also talked about, and just getting back to the whole portable device and phones, I think in our last conversation we had for the podcast, we talked about time management issues with teens. I'm going to probably paraphrasing this, that if a teen says they're spending 10 hours on homework, how much of that time that they're spending on homework is spent surfing the net, scrolling through their phones, scrolling through TikTok, scrolling through Instagram, doing the comparative analysis of whose life is better than mine, or what do I need to do to keep up with my friends? I mean, that I also think that also plays into time management, which again contributes to stress, which contributes to sleep problems.
100%. When I work with kids especially, I'll be like, honestly, when you're doing your work, how often are you grabbing your phone? Because that is just prolonging the amount of work that you're doing. Yeah. I really tried to have them actually put their phone in a different room when they're doing their homework. I said, you're going to get your homework done in like half the time if you just do it that way. Yeah. And it's hard for them. But once they actually do it a few times, they're like, oh my gosh, my homework is done so much faster at this point. But that also means that on their laptop, they need to silence all those notifications, because a lot of times everything is hooked up together. So their phone may not be with them, but on their laptop, they're getting all of their Snapchat and Instagram notifications.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I tell my students, look, the internet will still be there when you're done with class. Mm-hmm. So try to give me your attention, focus on what you need to know, and then you can do what you want. But it's like, yeah, I mean, the internet will wait. I mean, it's not going to self-destruct because we're not on it. So as a sleep coach, and I want to get into basically how you set up a treatment plan with an individual, with an adult or teen in a family. If I were coming to you as an individual with sleep disturbance, sleep issues, what's the process? what do you do to get me engaged, involved, and what type of information will you look for to get from me?
Yeah, so my intake paperwork is pretty lengthy. I really want to know what's going on with your sleep and what's going on with your daytime activities. What does your day look like? What does your sleep look like? What does your exercise look like? What does your food look like? You name it, I want to know all of it because it impacts. One of the first things I do is we actually really start tracking the sleep a little bit differently. A lot of people are like, oh, I have a tracking device. I know my sleep. And it's like, that's not the information I'm looking for, actually. I want to know how you feel about your sleep. So I have a lot of people track how much time is in bed and how much time they're actually asleep for. To see that number, I want to make sure that when they're in bed, they're actually asleep. So we do a lot of behavioral work on being able to fall asleep when you get into bed. And if not, get back out of bed, because I want your brain to link bed means go to sleep. And I think when we use our bed as, you know, a place where we eat or watch TV, or our brain gets confused. So linking that very strongly is one of the first things that I really look at. Yeah. And then in following sessions, it's, you know, looking at your daytime activities and how are they either helping or hurting your sleep. Looking at then your sleep, you know, environment as well is a whole nother thing we go through. And then, okay, how do you start not turning off your brain, but not being so attached to your thoughts? That way you can get to sleep. So there's a lot of structure in place in terms of what I expect from people to be doing during the day and at night. But there's also a lot of little tweaks that we need to get done. But the most important thing is really understanding what our sleep looks like. And again, the tracking devices, in my opinion, don't do a great job with telling us much.
No, I mean, I have sleep apnea, and what my machine will tell me is that how much sleep I got. I mean, did I use it for over 4 hours? Did I sleep over 4 hours? But it's not going to tell me what part of my sleep cycle I spent the most time in. It's not going to tell me that. You know?
Right. And really, it comes down to, regardless of what a device is telling you, how do you feel the next day?
That's right.
That's what I really want to know. And people get so caught up in the numbers of the sleep devices, it almost makes the anxiety around sleep worse.
Well, yeah. I mean, if a person can function on 6 hours sleep and they're getting 6 hours of restorative sleep, then that's going to work. But if I'm sleeping 8 to 10 hours and I'm still waking up tired, something's up.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So it's really, how do you feel when you wake up? And with these devices, people are like, oh my gosh, I only got my 2 hours in, or I didn't get enough REM sleep. And they almost get in their heads about it and make themselves more tired than really what they are. Listen, everybody at some point is going to have a bad night of sleep.
Yep.
That's okay. You could still function the next day.
Yep. Yeah. I mean, it's when you have 3 or 4 nights in a row that make it difficult to function.
Right.
We mentioned mental health concerns as a result of lack of sleep or sleep deprivation. The one thing that comes to mind is depression for me. Are there any other mental health challenges that are positively correlated with sleep problems?
Yeah. Depression is definitely probably the number one, but also just the mood issues, irritability. When you're not sleeping, you're highly irritable.
Mm-hmm.
We also get into attention issues. You can't focus if you're on a lack of sleep. You can't retain information. You also can't make good decisions. When our brain is not functioning well, we are just overwhelmed. We can't really think of things properly, and we make poor decisions. So there's a lot that comes from not sleeping well.
Yeah, and I imagine the longer that pattern gets prolonged, the earlier we intervene, the better off it's going to be for us. We can circumvent problems long term.
Yeah. Some people, because they've had sleep issues for so long, they don't even realize that their mood or lack of attention or anger is because of their sleep issues. They're just used to it. They just think this is them.
Yeah. How pervasive are sleep disturbances in young adults? Sometimes I think it gets... Whatever statistics there are on this, my guess is that I would guess that it's underreported.
I think it's completely underreported. I think a lot of people will say to me, I don't have a sleep problem. And then we look and they're not going to bed till 2 in the morning and they're getting up at 6:30. That's mm-hmm. a sleep problem.
Yeah. You know, and I look at students, particularly in one school that I teach, you know, it's an art school, and these kids are running with their art projects, with their studio work 4 or 5 hours a day. And then they come in for a morning class, they're whipped. And I can't imagine, especially during finals week, I can imagine that that gets pretty, the sleep disturbances become more intensified. Mm-hmm. Are there any tips that you have for college students who are, they want to get their sleep, but yet they're faced with the issue of burning the midnight oil, past the midnight oil, to get all the requirements done for their finals, for their projects? Is there anything that they can do to at least develop some sleep stability during those more chaotic times in their academic schedule?
Absolutely. I tell my college kids that I work with all the time, you can't throw your sleep routine out the window just because it's finals. That's actually when you need your sleep routine more, because it's going to help you remember what you just studied all day. Like when we go to sleep, that's when our brain is processing our entire day. So if you want that to stick, you actually need to sleep. So what I always look at with the college students is that they really do have enough time in the day to get all this done if they structure their day the right way. And that's what we look at. Where are the pockets of time? What does your schedule actually look like? Where are you wasting time? Where can you be at the library uninterrupted? And, you know, I remember this one kid in particular. She would be up till almost 2 in the morning. She was a straight A student, very hard major. And she's like, I can't go to sleep earlier because my grades are going to start slipping. And we really started changing around her daily routine and habits. And she started going to bed, no joke, by 11 o'clock every night. And she was still a straight A student and getting all of her work done. We just had to shift everything.
Yeah. And it's just, I think a lot of times young adults just get so overwhelmed with the numerous categories that they're dealing with as students and as brothers, as sisters, as sons and daughters, that they don't really take enough time to think. It's all, you know, it's all crisis-oriented decision-making. And I think if we could just sit them down and say, let's sit down with them and have a conversation to see where they're using their time, model calmness, model safety, I think they'll be able to figure it out, because they're young adults I've worked with are resilient. They're capable, as long as we give them, you know, the opportunity to, you know, to manifest those skills. They know themselves just as well as anybody, or even better.
Absolutely. Yeah. So sometimes it's just really taking a step back from their daily life and going, let's look at it from afar.
Yeah. Well, I want to shift gears just for a little bit. I know in our last podcast, I think we talked about your Mental Health Uncensored book and workbook. So tell our audience a little more about those books, and particularly how those books align with your work as a sleep coach.
Sure. So I have two books out there. One is Mental Health Uncensored, 10 Foundations Every Parent Needs to Know. And then I have a workbook for teens, which is Mental Health Uncensored, 10 Foundations Every Teen Needs to Know. And in these, I really look at the very basic foundations of mental health, which is, you know, exercise and hydration and eating well. And sleep is a whole chapter in each one of these books. And what I love about the workbook is, because when I have so many kids telling me, my sleep isn't an issue, I really have them start tracking their sleep and then talking about their mood after.
Yeah.
That way they can see what it looks like. And then we start looking at, all right, well, how do we adjust it? What's going on during the day? Where are you wasting time? And we give them the tools to really be able to take their sleep into their own hands. And for the parent book, I talk a lot about electronics out of the bedroom, how to model good sleep. What does the schedule look like? Giving your child downtime, because all of these are really important to set up good sleep.
Do you also encourage them to keep a kind of like a sleep journal in terms of when they're having difficulty sleeping, what they think might be the causes of that?
Absolutely.
You know, and just have them track down what happened during the day that might have caused an interruption in sleep. And that also includes, you know, their phone habits and portable device habits.
Yes. Yeah. We talk a lot about the phone habits.
How much does mindfulness, meditation, and other types of movement therapies, how effective is that for young adults in facilitating good sleep?
It's really important. And this is what I talk to my kids about all the time, is that when you meditate, what you're doing, any form of meditation, whether it's a mindful walk, whether you're really sitting down and, you know, meditating, doing yoga, what you're doing is you're going to have the thoughts of, oh, I need to do this or I need to do that. But then it's letting the thought go ahead and coming back to the present moment.
Yes.
And you learn to come back to the present moment numerous times. And what I tell them is that the more you practice coming back to the moment, the better you get at it.
Yes.
So at night, when you have these thoughts, you're able to come back to the moment.
Yes.
It's all practice.
Yeah. I mean, it's like, you know, when you exercise, it's muscle memory. You know, the more you do a particular routine to strengthen a set of muscles, the more effortless it becomes. And of course, the more the muscles begin to adapt. So now you got to find a different way to exercise those same muscles differently. But the more you practice, the more adept you become and the more benefits that you see. And also with your workbook, I like the fact that they have specific tasks, because I think until we can do insight-oriented work with anybody, we need to give them the skill set or expose them to the skill set or have them identify the skills that they need to get to that insight. And I'm a firm believer that task-oriented stuff and assignments are very, very empowering to help individuals take responsibility for their own success.
Absolutely. Yeah, when you see what's happening, when it's on paper, it's like, oh, wow, okay, now I know what to do.
Yeah. And I mean, dance is another thing that I think is great for young adults. I know that's very healing in terms of young teenagers that have anorexia or other type of eating disorders. But, you know, I think the thing about young adults is you don't need to do traditional talk therapy with them. You can do a variety of different hands-on stuff that they'll gravitate to.
Yes, absolutely.
Any other antecedents of sleep issues with young adults that you care to comment on at this point? Anything that we're missing?
I think that one of the things I want everybody to hear is that sleep isn't just something that's nice to have. Sleep is something that not only impacts our mental health, but it actually impacts our physical health. And if you want your body to repair and if your mind's going to be strong, you have to get good sleep. It's really the foundation for everything in life.
What are some of the physical problems you've seen occur as a result of individuals with chronic sleep problems?
I think when you're getting to the really chronic sleep problems, you're getting into a lot of medical issues. One of them being obesity, because a lot of your hormones of, oh, I'm hungry, oh, I'm full, are actually produced while you're sleeping. So if that's not happening, your whole appetite is off. Then, of course, if you're sleep deprived, you don't want to work out either. It's like layers upon layers that's happening just with your weight. So that's one of the big issues. Brain fog. You can't think clearly if you're not sleeping. Your brain really needs that time. Injuries, you're not recovering from injuries quickly. You know, these are all things that impact sleep. And there's so many studies out there that are also linking diabetes to sleep issues or, you know, a million other things. Again, because all of your cells need that time to really release toxins, to rebuild. That's when everything is happening.
Yeah, and I can imagine, too, lack of sleep causes stress, which probably stimulates a cortisol response. Oh, yeah. Excessive amounts of cortisol and prolonged stress can lead to not only compromised immune system issues, but I'm sure other things, maybe autoimmune difficulties and other types of issues as well, too, that go with that. So
immune system is another one that it fires on at night.
Yeah. Lack of sleep, it would appear, has pervasive effects on our mind, our body, and ultimately our spirit. Well, one of the last questions I'd like to ask you today, and you've left us with a lot of great takeaways, but you're welcome. If there's one ultimate takeaway, one ultimate wisdom, Carrie, you want to leave our audience with today, the young people of the world with today, what would that be?
I think it would be that there's a lot of things going on in life that are important, but none of them will work out as well as they could if you don't have enough sleep.
Makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
What, you know, the one thing that just came to mind, what about sleep apps? Like, you know, Calm, Insight Timer. How effective are those? And I know a lot of times we're going to be plugged into our phones.
Yeah.
So how do we reconcile, let's say, and so somebody says, I want to use Calm or Insight Timer. Mm-hmm. How do we reconcile that with the fact that, well, if you use your phone late at night, it's probably going to detract from your ability to sleep?
So I'm okay with using them if you're listening to them, not looking at them, listening to them for a guided meditation.
Okay.
But besides that, you know, I don't want you looking at a device.
Makes sense. But that thought just occurred to me.
Yeah, I mean, I love when people listen to meditation before bed, but listen to it and then have it away from you.
You got it. Carrie, if people want to contact you, contract for your services, purchase your books, what's the best way for them to do that?
Sure. My website, Carrie Cooper Holistic Therapy, you'll find everything there. But you'll also find me on Instagram at Carrie Cooper Holistic Therapy. And I have another page on Instagram just for sleep, which is Sleep Solutions by Carrie.
I'll make sure all of that gets into the episode notes before our episode goes live. And with that, Carrie, thank you so much for being, again, a wonderful guest contributor to the Teaching Journeys podcast. As always, I enjoyed our conversation. And if you got a third book coming out, get in touch with me.
Thank you so much.
You're welcome. And with that, that's a wrap on another episode of the Teaching Journeys podcast. I'm your host, Dave Roberts, wishing you peace.